Good evening. I see why they put me last. This was a lot of sobering information tonight, and we've been through this storm, and we actually have had some successes and some silver linings, and hopefully some of what we learned will be helpful to other communities that are facing similar issues as we go forward. I'd first like to know, just by a show of hands, who's going to be here tomorrow and hear me tomorrow morning for that presentation? So it's the majority. Okay, I have two very distinct presentations, and if there were only a few of you that were going to be here, I was going to try to cram in some of those other slides. But basically, tonight is what we as a Chamber of Commerce did to support the business community and to help save the economic shoreline in our community. And tomorrow is case studies of the 29 businesses, what 24 of them did versus what 5 did, which was very, very different from the other 24. So before and after pictures, design changes, and some of that. So tonight's a little feel-good, and tomorrow's a little more practical and moving forward. So if you can join us tomorrow, great. And if you can't, I can email you some of those slides for you, okay? So as you said, Hurricane Sandy definitely hit westerly Rhode Island the hardest in the state of Rhode Island and in all of New England. We were the epicenter. The aerial views and some of the views behind me will show you some of the significant damage. We basically had about 6 feet of water in most of the businesses that were located even a block and a half away from the shoreline. It was very, very devastating, and we'll have some more horrifying photos tomorrow for those of you. But basically, the piles of sand that you're about to see in one of the upcoming slides represented all the sand that was on the property of the business owners and in the streets, that the town went in, took all the sand, and stored it at the Musquamicket State Beach in the parking lot. And the town took the responsibility for sifting the sand so that all the nails and debris and glass and all the dangerous particles would be removed before that sand would eventually be put back in place in those businesses and to create a unified dune. Why did Musquamicket matter? Why didn't we just walk away and say, wow, that's, you know, a horrible situation, but we're fighting Mother Nature, you know, let's just let it go because 50 years, 300 years, there may not be an Atlantic Avenue in westerly Rhode Island is what some folks are saying. Well, it matters to us now. It matters to us today. For those of us that live there and work there, for those of us who have businesses that rely on that tourism industry, there's about 102, or there were, hotel rooms in Musquamicket at the time. So when you think of that, that's meal taxes, that's hotel taxes, sale taxes. We have 35 timeshare units and over 400 beach cottages. $9.3 million in sales alone just in Musquamicket, and then it's estimated another $28 million when you consider the attractions in neighboring communities such as Mystic. So we do matter. And it wasn't a question of will we rebuild. It was a question of how will we rebuild. Some of the economic realities, if we didn't, is what would our local tax rate be? How would our local property owners be affected if we didn't get those properties back online and that money wasn't coming back into the town's coffers? How would we make up that gap in our town budget? How would all the other businesses throughout our community be affected by the ripple effect? And how would the social service agencies in our community meet the growing demands of all of the 500 people whose jobs were dependent upon Musquamicket? And you may say, well, they're seasonal jobs. They weren't all seasonal jobs. There's about 50 full-time management positions and full-time jobs there, as well as the jobs available to our college students and teachers that work there in the summer, et cetera. So for us as a Chamber of Commerce, it was an automatic response. We immediately launched into a campaign that we labeled Bring Back the Beach. We created a logo in less than 48 hours after the storm. Myself and a staff member over a glass of wine sat down and came up with the hand in the shape of a heart because we were trying to convey the emotion that our community has and the deep connections that we all have and the memories relative to our beach community. And to the people that live there and the people that own businesses there. We're a very unique community in that there are no chain hotels. These are all independently owned and operated businesses. Some of them are third-generation businesses. These are people we know, people that have served on our board of directors, people that play soccer with our kids. It really was personal for us. We owned the logo, and we restricted the use of the phrase, and that was very important to us because storms and crises bring out the best in people, but they also can bring out the worst in people. And once you have something that's working, other people want to take advantage of it and make money off of your slogan, your logo, your fundraising. And we ran into some of that along the way, which I would, any community that's dealing with a crisis like this offline, I would be happy to give you some additional advice on how to deal with that. But we're nimble. We're not a government agency. So we were able to react very quickly. We had an emergency board meeting, and they were confused. They didn't know what we were going to do. And we came out with a plan where the chamber was the nucleus, and we had many arms of activities that we were going to try and undertake. And every one of my 24 board members left that room knowing they had a job and they were accountable for it. It was a very serious meeting, unlike any in the 19 years that I've worked there. But everyone left with a sense of pride and a sense of purpose. And some of the slides that we're going to go over will cover the various arms on that ray of sunshine, if you will. The first thing that we did is we assisted the town hall. We operated as a satellite office. The town did not have the space. They did not have the employees. They did not have a location, the wherewithal to be able to handle the reentry process. In other words, the beach was shut down. The state police were there. And no one was allowed to go to their property, businesses or homes, for several days, until the town could clear the roads, deal with the downed wires and the dangerous situation that was there. And as the town started to open up roads little by little, and residents found out that residents on these 10 streets could now have access to their homes, the only way you could get to your home or your property if you were a business owner is if you came to our office first. You had to show your ID, and if you were a contractor, you had to have a work order from the owner of that home. So, you know, we wouldn't have contractors from other communities just coming in trying to take advantage of homeowners or to sell products. It was also to prevent looting, because in the initial hours after the storm, there were some very unfortunate cases of that. So it was an immediate lockdown, and we became the point of entry, if you will. You couldn't get into the beach past those state police unless you got past me and my staff and my volunteers, which were incredible. The other thing we did is we wanted to claim our territory and let people know who was raising money and who was doing things to support the business community. So we put 8-foot banners on the majority of the businesses at the beach that were affected, because we knew that once it was open to the public, there would be gawkers and natural curiosity of people that wanted to drive down and see the damages. And we wanted to make sure that they knew that we were the group that they could send their checks into if they wanted to do something meaningful, because 100% of the donations that we were collecting were going to go to the businesses, not the residents, the businesses. We're the Chamber of Commerce. There were about 8 individuals whose homes were affected, and they were relocated, people that owned apartments. There was nobody in a home that lost their home in Musquamaket. So it wasn't a situation where you had, for example, the Red Cross or something coming in and helping displaced homeowners. That was not our situation. And the majority of the damages were cottages and businesses. We served as a host location for every meeting of every federal agency, state agency, town meeting, you name it. Our conference room became the epicenter or the nerve center, if you will, so that all the business folks knew where to go. We were one-stop shopping. We allowed every agency that wanted to use some of our extra office space. Thank goodness we had a couple extra offices that we built. We expanded our building a few years ago for future growth. Those offices were sitting empty, and boy, did they come in handy. So a person could go in and they could apply for an SBA loan. They could go in and talk to the FEMA officer. They could go in, talk to me about a grant program. It was as convenient as it possibly could be for people in a very hectic situation. We coordinated media coverage. Obviously, there were TV stations from all over that wanted interviews. They wanted real life stories. They wanted the good, the bad, the heroes. And we know all these people personally. We knew the backstories, and we were able to set up all those interviews and work with the media to do that, to serve our own purpose as well, to gain support from the public from a financial standpoint, and to hopefully send out that message that, yeah, we're in a tough situation, but we will be back and we will be ready for Memorial Day weekend. And we said that from day one, and we were sticking with that. We served as a public information hub. Folks from the public referred to our website, our Facebook page, the number of our Facebook likes went up. Our phones were, crazy. Whether it was a public event such as the one that was Bless Our Beach, produced by Barbara Cardiff, who's in the audience tonight, and it was a very emotional and healing event to gather the community quickly after the storm, or whether it was new regulations from the town or what day's trash pickup was going to be down at the beach for scrap metal or what have you. We worked hand in hand with the town to get those messages out. Our goal, again, have every business open by Memorial Day, and we developed strategy partners to help us achieve that goal. One was Serve Rhode Island. They, as well as the Musquamicut Business Association, helped us identify about 1,200 volunteers. And these are folks that gave up their days, their weekends, and came into our community, and they did everything you can imagine: shovel sand, deal with sewage, remove debris, clean out cottages, lift heavy, furniture that was soaked, et cetera. And then we worked to get everything we possibly could donated for our community to save money for the businesses, and in some cases, the homeowners as well. So we secured thousands of work gloves from all over the country, dust masks, contractor trash bags. We secured pallets and pallets of free water, flood buckets. And some of these came from unlikely sources. The Rhode Island Community Food Bank sent down a tractor truckload of flood buckets. So we were able to provide them to the 29 businesses and then had ample available to also distribute to the homeowners in our community. So we were surprised that they were there in that capacity. It's not something I would have thought that they were a resource for, but we were very grateful for it. We secured wading boots because we had volunteers at the shore in the water picking out whatever they could. The Washington Trust Company paid for bus transportation to shuttle in the volunteers to our community in the early weekends after the storm. And the Musquamicut Business Association took responsibility for coordinating the actual assignments in the cottages and the homeowners. We dealt with the businesses. They dealt with the homeowners. So in total, about 400 beach cottages were assisted by our volunteers. And the chamber documented the personal stories as much as we could along the way, the heartache, the triumph. We photographed everything. We felt that it would help with the public appeal. We felt that it might help if we were going to do maybe a video when it was all said and done. We weren't really sure. It came in handy also for documentation, for proof of grants down the road, and I'll get into that a little later. We coordinated the volunteers to work in the businesses, so we'd send out an email each week and find out how many you needed at your business and what skills they needed, and we would find those folks and we would supply them with either the rakes or the carpentry tools or whatever it was. And we had some amazing people from Newport that came down and helped us out as a group, and then some of them came down personally for 3 or 4 weeks after that, and I'm still in touch with them to this day. We secured and delivered over 1,800 free lunches. These are lunches that we drove to the businesses even before the roads were open. Don't tell the state police that, but we did. We got it in there to the businesses so they wouldn't have to leave their business. And the reason for that is, again, the looting. We wanted to make sure that we were feeding them and their volunteers and their family members that were trying to batten down the hatches at their businesses, that a wall had been blown out of or several several sections of walls had been blown out. So we did as much as we could to bring services to them. And again, the Musquamicut Business Association helped us with some of that. The Salvation Army came to our rescue, and they provided hot breakfast every day to the volunteers that were there. We then put together snack supplies, snacks and supplies, like cleaning supplies, and delivered them to every business. Just 4 days after the storm, we established a presence at the town beach with the approval of the Westerly Town Council. It was one of the best things we did. It was a very primitive presence at first. If you go back one slide, Maria, it was like a card table with some T-shirts that we had printed up. Within 4 days after the hurricane, we already had T-shirts available. So there we were with our little table, and that's all that there was there. But people were coming down to the beach as soon as those roads were open, and they just wanted somebody to hug, somebody to talk to, something that they could feel like they were doing something. And what they were doing was spending their $15 and buying our T-shirts, which made a big difference later, and we'll get into that. But we also brought the chair in. This chair ended up in Winnipeg Pond. It used to be in a business's front yard, and it got pulled in the pond. We got someone to pull it out of the pond, and this machine drove it down Atlantic Avenue and put it there, and we had a local artist paint it. And it became an iconic symbol, really, of our recovery efforts. And we had an expanded presence at the town beach. We brought in a camper that was donated to us. So we had heat down there. We had music. And we had a full-blown setup welcome center with signage. So people knew if they wanted to volunteer, this was a place you could go. If you wanted to donate, you could go. If you wanted to take a picture, whatever. So it was a place for reflecting, a place for, you know, crying, a place for talking to town leaders and all sorts of things. We also created free signs for the businesses down at the beach. We used recycled wood that was in our basement at the chamber and got local artists to paint signs. And all the businesses today have them on display in their new property. But probably the most important thing we could have done was raise money for them. These are, again, very small businesses, mom and pops, most of them. So we started raising money because the insurance policies were very busy arguing with each other about what they weren't going to cover. The wind policy was saying it was not covered under their policy. It was covered under the other policy. And businesses that thought they had $500,000, $600,000, $800,000 worth of coverage were finding out they were going to be getting checks for about $200,000. And it was scary. So we started raising money. We started with our donation jars, and we'll whip through some of these. We did $5,600 just in donation jars at businesses throughout the community. We had some benefit concerts. We had people turn my boardroom into a hair salon and do hair cut-a-thons, and kids who had yard sales in their neighborhood and came in and dropped off their monies to me. People from all over the country that were reading about our efforts and sending us messages on Facebook and doing Tupperware parties and basket parties and everything and mailing us their checks. Block Island adopted us and had a fundraiser that I went over to. A wonderful woman in our community passed away, and her family named our Chamber Foundation as a recipient of funds in lieu of flowers. That raised over $7,000, just that alone. Karate-a-thons, Zumba-thons, you name it. We had bowl-a-thons. We had every possible a-thon that you could think of. And then my chamber colleagues, the people that I've worked with for years, you know, I put them on the spot and asked them, told them, you will give, what will you give? And some gave checks. Some would get their members to donate gift certificates that I would then auction off at some of our fundraising events. But they all gave. They were all there for us, particularly the Northern Rhode Island Chamber and the Central Rhode Island Chamber, pictured with me in this. The teens in our community raised $11,000 through a grease recycling program that they run, which was incredible. The senior enlisted Navy officers from right here in Newport are in the next picture, and that's out of their own pockets. They came up with $1,300. We launched our own beer. We called it the Bring Back the Beach Blonde Ale, and we received all the profits, which were $5,000. It sold out in about 2 weeks. We sold more than $48,000 in those little T-shirts that you saw in that picture. T-shirts and sweatshirts, they were everywhere because people wanted to help, and who doesn't have $15? It was an easy way. Not everyone works at a company that's going to write a check for $1,000 or at some of the foundations that I was writing grants to, but everyone was buying these as holiday gifts and family gifts. And when people came home for Thanksgiving weekend, which was just about 3-4 weeks after the storm, they'd have their Thanksgiving dinner and go down to the beach, and, you know, 15 of them would buy their shirts and go home with their shirts or hoodies. We sent them all over the country. Those board members you saw earlier, I had two board members just in charge of the mail orders that were coming in all over the country. But businesses bought them in groups and wore them proudly. I appealed to my friends in southeastern Connecticut, the Mystic Aquarium, the Seaport, the iconic tourist attractions that I've worked with over the years, and said, what are you going to do to help? And boy, did they come through. They hosted a networking event where I put on a PowerPoint presentation, basically bawled my eyes out at the end of it, and in 7 minutes, they pledged $57,000 to Westerly, Rhode Island. My office produced an event that was a black tie event. We raised $102,000 in one night at the Ocean House on a black and white masquerade. And then we won a contest from Matrix Hair Care, and they picked Westerly, Rhode Island to do their annual fundraiser. So they came and did a huge cut-a-thon with every salon in town, and we raised $6,000 doing that. When it was all said and done, we raised $430,000, and we gave it to the small businesses. How did we do it? It was a matrix system that we set up. Companies that were larger, had more employees, more jobs at stake, received more money. Companies that did the right thing and had adequate insurance, as opposed to some companies that had zero insurance, received more money from us. If you took $7,000 out of your profits to protect your interests and be responsible, you should be rewarded more than the guy next to you that just thought, oh, I'm only open for 8 weeks, I'm going to wing it. So we had 12 criteria that we used when we came up with the range of dollars that we were going to award, the percentages of every dollar that the businesses were going to get. Some businesses got over $40,000. Some businesses got $5,000 or $6,000. But all 29 received something from us in terms of money. When it was all said and done, we knew that we wanted to herald the new season in a big way to thank the community that had been there for us 110%. We planned an event called Hands Along the Sands. Over 2,000 people attended this, including school children, business owners, politicians, residents, tourists, the media, of course. Actually, it received national coverage. The Associated Press covered it. And again, she, just like she did the beginning Bless Our Beach program, Barbara Cardiff was there for me, and she chaired this event alongside with me. And it was a healing process to have 2,000 people at 10 o'clock on a Friday holding hands along our entire shoreline in Westerly, Rhode Island. It was incredibly emotional and very empowering. And then about a week later, we held our first event of the season because we wanted to send a message to the community, changing our tune from Bring Back the Beach to Musquamaket Beach is back and better than ever. We held a new event, which was Boulder Dash, and we had over 2,000 athletes come in May. So it was our first showcase of our community. Look how far we've come. Look, we've rebuilt. The businesses are open. The beach is back. So it was a great commercial for us and got a lot of wonderful coverage. But you heard about, you know, New Jersey and you heard about New York. And when you look at those states and you see the damage they had, what they didn't get and what they didn't have was a chamber of commerce like ours that went above and beyond. There's no other community that did what our little town of Westerly, Rhode Island did. And we couldn't have done it without the generosity of everybody, the kids, the school children, everybody. I mean, it was just an incredible outpouring of support. 27 of the 29 businesses were open on Memorial Day weekend. One did not open until Father's Day weekend. The other one just tore down half their building this week, sadly, but it's because they're doing a new business model, and it's been a long 2-year process of going through with architectural designs and contractors to try and figure out what they can afford and what was feasible. But it all went back to that, you know, first meeting at our office where we had this, you know, program of what we were going to try to accomplish and our goals. And so I have a little bit of advice because Pam said there's hopefully going to be some other, you know, community leaders, business organizations, or chambers in the audience. And what would you recommend to them? The first thing would be respond quickly. We had national organizations that were really good at raising money using pictures of Westerly, Rhode Island, in their emails and in their TV commercials, and they did nothing for Westerly, Rhode Island. Nothing. They were not there for us at all. But because we had a logo and a slogan, and we had an established 501c3 foundation, and we had the trust of the town of Westerly having done donations through our foundation for a variety of projects over the years, we had the public trust, and we were able to move very quickly and start the fundraising campaign and build the momentum that was required to do this whole Bring Back the Beach campaign. Delegate or suffocate. If someone called my office, is there anything I can do to help? Oh, yes. Don't call unless you really mean that, because I was assigning everybody everything. And they were willing to do it. People want to help. They just don't know how to help. So you needed the right leadership to be able to point them in the right direction. Establishing partnerships is crucial. As much as you think you want to do it all or no one can do it better, you know, I was out there recruiting volunteers before I even knew what Serve Rhode Island was, and they came in, and this is all they do all day long, 365 days a year, and they do it much better than what we would have been able to do. So establishing the partnerships was huge. And involving every segment of the community, you know, don't rule out the school kids. Don't rule out the churches and some of the other organizations that surprised us. Do not take no for an answer. We were really nervous because there were some new fire code regulations that were going into effect January 1. And if they didn't have their building plans approved and stamped prior to that, these businesses that were just devastated on October 29th were going to have to rebuild under the new fire code regulations. And so I had asked some political folks in our community, can you get that changed? Can you get us a special exception? Can you buy us some time for 3 months? And was basically told, oh, my gosh, you know, that's crazy. It's never going to happen. I can't get the support. Well, when I didn't get the answer I want, I wrote to the governor and I copied every news media in the state of Rhode Island. And guess what? A week later, the governor came down and announced that that was going to be expanded for 3 months. Great idea he had. So it was a wonderful thing. But you're going to come up against lots and lots of no's and just keep at it from every possible angle, because sometimes you can get over that hurdle. We did right by the community. We're a chamber of commerce. Chambers only focus on helping their members, not in this case. I don't care who you were. Many of these companies had never been a member of the chamber. They might be seasonal, open for 8 weeks. They didn't think they needed us. We gave money to everybody. Thanking people and documenting. I talked about the photographs. I had companies apply for grant money from us saying they lost all of their inventory, and I had photographs because I was in their store 3 days after the storm, taking pictures of them and all their inventories on the wall. And then they'd apply for grant money. So documenting the good, documenting the bad, documenting for a variety of reasons is just so important. And documenting before the storm, one of the best emails we sent out to our members was the day of the storm, please go and photograph your building inside and out, your property. And we got so many thank yous for that little reminder, because it was something that helped them with their insurance down the road. In terms of preparing going forward, obviously 501c3 partner is really important if you ever plan to launch any kind of a recovery campaign, anything like ours, even on a smaller scale. Creating databases of these organizations, knowing who they are so that they can help you quickly. I didn't know some of them, and I sure am glad that they found us. Securing cell phone numbers, I never would have thought to ask for cell phone numbers of my business members. Now I have them all. And then being involved in the town's emergency response plan, we're at the table all the time now that the town's seen exactly, you know, what we can do in terms of helping them above and beyond. We're at that table. And then researching grant options. There's lots of money available out there for people that want to raise their buildings and want to improve, and not just through the Chamber of Commerce. So we try to share that information as much as possible and encourage businesses to do that into their planning. And you'll see tomorrow that many of them, at least five of the 29, did that, didn't just have the knee-jerk reaction just to build. So I look forward to sharing those stories with you tomorrow, where you can see some real-life examples of sort of long-term planning and some fresh thinking to sea level rise. Thank you for your attention.